Hello out there and welcome to Your Next Mission video podcast. The Army National Guard is made up of uncommon people doing uncommon things in the face of national disasters, serving a bigger purpose in 2,300 communities across our nation. Our guests today are the leadership team of the Army National Guard, who will tell us how the Guard is helping defend America's freedoms and ideals. So please stay tuned for this enlightening conversation. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Your Next Mission video podcast, where we tell the stories of those who have served in the past and those who are serving today. From transition to financial wellness, VA benefits to mental health, we cover issues facing veterans, active military, and their families. Now here's your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley.
Thanks for joining us, and thanks to all the veterans and service members and their families for your service to our great country. Now, before we get started, I personally want to thank our presenting sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, whose members are the mission, and Purdue Global, where you can start your comeback, and USAA, whose mission is taking care of the military community and their families always. With additional sponsorship from Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental and Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision, together, they make your next mission happen. They love our veterans and families, and if you've ever listened to this show, I always say it, we love them too. Today, we're talking to the leadership team of the Army National Guard about how they are making a real difference in the communities across our country. And I'm excited, I should say, I'm really pumped up. I'm excited to introduce Lieutenant General Jonathan M. Stubbs, Director, and Sergeant Major James Brian Kendrick, Command Sergeant Major of the Army National Guard. Welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be here, SMA.
Thank you, SMA. Appreciate being here.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the show. It's always good for me to talk to soldiers. I'm pumped up. I got a lot to talk about here.
Yeah, we're pumped up, too. We got a lot to discuss with you as well.
Well, I appreciate that. Hey, before we get started, how about taking a little bit of time and tell the audience just a little bit about yourself? And, sir, we'll start with you.
Okay, great. Thanks, SMA. Really proud to be on the podcast with you, representing almost 328,000 Army National Guardsmen across our 54 states, territories, and the District of Columbia. Yeah, so, you know, I guess my story starts with my father. My father was the first Guardsman I ever met. He was a chaplain in an armor battalion in the Kentucky Army National Guard. So my earliest memories were of my father going to drill, us dropping our father off, my dad off at the local armory there to go to annual training down at Fort Hood, Texas, or Camp Shelby, Mississippi, and then getting him back after a couple weeks away, going on vacations without him, and just, you know, watching him serve and everything else. So he kind of planted the seed of service and what it meant to be a soldier. And he also just kind of, you know, helped me realize my dream and really encouraged me along my path. I didn't join until my senior year of college. I joined the Tennessee Army National Guard. I joined as a private first class in an infantry company in Lexington, Tennessee. Then soon thereafter, I went to officer candidate school, graduated officer candidate school in 1995. I married a farmer's daughter from Arkansas. So I moved over to Arkansas, joined the Arkansas National Guard in the fall of 1995, and just started my career there as a young infantry platoon leader. And then just kind of matriculated through the ranks and everything else. I had an opportunity to serve as an active guard reservist, an AGR officer for about 25 years and had the privilege to lead at every level within my brigade combat team within the state of Arkansas, the 39th Brigade Combat Team, the Bowie Team. platoon leader, recon platoon leader. I commanded a rifle company in Northeast Baghdad in the Adamiya district of Northeast Baghdad in 04-05, went back to Iraq as a brigade S3, commanded a battalion, commanded the BCT, and then just did a number of staff assignments as an AGR officer in the Arkansas Guard, culminating as the state chief of staff. 2021, had an opportunity to come out here to the National Capital Region, get promoted to Brigadier General, serve on the National Guard Bureau staff, and then I spent a year serving on the HQDA G357 team down in the operations division as the deputy operations director for the Army, an incredible experience. reported in January of 22, and then a month later, Russia invaded Ukraine. So really time traveled through that assignment, just with a lot going on, very interesting. And then in January of 2023, the governor of Arkansas, Sarah Sanders, asked me to come back to serve as the adjutant general for the state of Arkansas. So reported back there in January of 2023, did that job for about 18 months, then was asked to come back and serve as director of the Army Guard. So I reported around the 1st of August of 2024, into that job. So I'm going on about 10 months in the position, and just really proud to be here. And like I said, representing our great guardsmen across the nation.
You know, you said a bunch of things that I could relate to. One is your dad was in armor. I'm an old armor guy, so I love that already. And the other thing, yes, you was a private when you started out. Did you ever make Spec 4 or anything?
No, I never made Spec 4. I joined as a PFC, and then I didn't spend too long in the enlisted ranks, and then I was turning out to go to OCS soon thereafter. So, but I'm proud of the fact that that I joined as a PFC, went to basic and AIT, one station unit training down at Fort Benning, Georgia, there, and got qualified as an enlisted 11 Bravo.
Hoo-ah! Yeah. Hey, Sergeant Major, how about yourself? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hey, SMA. Yeah, so my military journey started 1989, senior year of high school. My dad, who's a Vietnam veteran, wanted to know what my plan post high school was. And I said, well, I think I'm going to live here and go to college. And he said, well, what's your plan to pay for that? I said, I kind of thought you were the plan, Dad. And he said, that's not going to work. He said, but I'm going to help you out. And shortly thereafter, I was talking to an active duty, active Army recruiter, and joined the active duty Army, got stationed over in Germany as a combat engineer. Unit got called up for a Desert Shield, Desert Storm. So went over and participated in that. And once that was done, my active duty time was, term of service was over, and I joined the Army National Guard in the state of Florida, and spent the first several years there as a traditional drilling guard member, going to college, working part-time, and going to drill and to annual training. I had the opportunity to become an active guard member when my unit had a vacancy or an opening, and started at the company level serving as an admin supply NCO, worked my way up to readiness NCO, and then through a variety of staff and leadership assignments at the both our at Camp Blanding, our training center, and at the Joint Force Headquarters, made first sergeant. And I had joined when I joined the Army National Guard. I became an explosive ordnance disposal technician, so got to go serve as a first sergeant with the EOD company there in the Florida Army National Guard. We deployed to in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom. Had teams working in Kuwait, Iraq, and Qatar. And when we came back from that, got picked up to serve as a sergeant major. Served as the G3 sergeant major, doing operations, training, mobilization at the state level. Also served as the G1 sergeant major, and got the opportunity to be the CSM for our NCO academy. Served as an engineer battalion CSM. Later was selected to be the state CSM, and was serving as the command senior enlisted leader for the Florida National Guard. When shortly after Thanksgiving of last year, got a call from General Stubbs, who said, hey, I'd like to select you to be the 14th Command Sergeant Major for the Army National Guard, if you'll take the job. And I told him I'd be honored. And so I've been drinking from the fire hose ever since.
You know, I probably have talked to you before, because, you know, I live down just outside of Tampa. I'm sure I've talked to you before in the past anyway. The other thing is, here you go again. Your dad and me have a little bit in common. I was in Vietnam, too. So that's a while back. Well, thank you very much for that.
SMA, I know you probably don't remember, but I actually got to meet you for the first time. I'm not even sure that you'd been announced as the SMA, but it was in 2000. Back on MacDill Air Force Base, I was at a recognition ceremony. Sergeant Major of the Army Hall was there. Yeah. And I remember my state CSM, I said, hey, Sergeant Major, who is that? He said, that's Sergeant Major Jack Tilley. He said, he's probably the next SMA. And lo and behold, you sure enough were.
Well, I think it was a fluke anyway. I think they just threw rocks and they hit me in the head or something like that. Hey, hey, sir, I as you know, it's a big year for the Army, the 250th year anniversary, to be exact. I'm pumped up about that. It's also a big one for our nation, the 250th anniversary, a beginning with the Revolutionary War. Would you tell us how the National Guard is, you know, is tied to these events?
Yeah, absolutely, SMA. I mean, you think about, and we just celebrated the 250th of the shot heard round the world at Lexington and Concord. That's 19 April 1775. So, you know, it started with Captain John Parker and his band of about 80 militiamen on Lexington Green fired the first shots against the British regulars. And then soon thereafter, a Colonel John Barrett and his regiment of about 400 to 500 militiamen fought a subsequent engagement at Concord at North Bridge. So again, that's April 19th, 1775, and the American Army's birthday is formally recognized as June the 14th. So certainly the militia played a key and critical role. The regular components of the Continental Army were formed around the militia. And so we were very proud of that history, and the legacy of those militia units continues to live on to this day. About 33 or 34 of our regiments out there can trace their lineage back to the Revolutionary War. So we're very, very proud of that. And again, you think about the Revolutionary War period beginning in 1775, but the actual militia, our National Guard, traces its roots all the way back to the Massachusetts Bay Colony, founded in 1636. So we got a very, very proud tradition over 388 years of serving our nation and serving our respective states in times of crisis and conflict.
You know, before the show even started, we was talking about the fact that, and I told you, I said, there's no way we could get the job done without the National Guard. You know, you're the they always say the Army's a 911. Well, you must be the extension of that 911 because we call you all the time to make sure we're moving out there. But, oh, my goodness, great history. So, Sergeant Major, what does it mean to the Army National Guard to be basically, I guess, as the general just said, the foundation of the Army from the very beginning?
We are incredibly proud that the citizen soldier, civilian in peace, soldier in time of war, played such a critical role. Our state militias, the forerunners of our modern-day Army National Guard, we're incredibly proud that they were instrumental in helping our young nation win its freedom and have been there since the very beginning of the United States Army.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people, again, they see the National Guard more than anybody else, and really the National Guard represents all of us. I used to say when we got together, we got the Guard Reserve and active duty together, I would always say, I'm sure they still say it, the Army, we all stick together because we got to work and function together. Hey, sir, you've been quoted as saying, I love this, trust is the fuel that powers the engine of the organization. How do leaders at the lowest level build and protect that trust within their teams?
Hey, SMA, I appreciate that. Yeah, so the way I look at the Army National Guard, we'll just use a good sturdy pickup truck that's the National Guard. We can do a whole lot of things. Just like you said, I mean, a pickup truck, we're out there doing stuff within the homeland. We got about a little over 10,000 soldiers decisively engaged in the homeland right now. We've got almost 20,000 soldiers overseas supporting contingency operations and our combatant commanders all around the world. So, you know, we're a pickup truck. We're dual use and everything else. The engine, without question, are our soldiers, right? I mean, they are what powers this pickup truck to get the job done, whether it's supporting our citizens inside the homeland in times of need or supporting our geographic combatant commanders in times of crisis and conflict. But that fuel that you speak of, without question, is trust. So if you think of our soldiers as the engine, that engine is fueled by trust. And the components of that fuel, I think, you know, if you look at the mixture of the additives within that, it's very simple for me. It's a matter of character, commitment, and competence. And at the lowest level, right, I think that's what it takes to build trust at echelon within our Army, within our units, is each and every soldier coalescing around this idea of being soldiers, men and women of great character, doing the right thing the right way for the right reason. You know, living towards the Army values of loyalty, duty, respect, selfless service, honor, integrity, and personal courage. So character, that first ingredient or additive to the fuel of trust. Second, you know, I think it's also just very simple commitment, right? We've got to be all in on this thing called the Army. We got to be all in on soldiering, you know, being the best teammate that we can be within our respective units. At the lowest level, whether it be a team, a crew, a section, a squad, and then our platoons and our companies and our battalions. But we got to be all in. We got to be all in together, a no-quit attitude. We got to be soldiers that are resilient and tough, soldiers that are gritty. And then lastly, that last additive with respect to trust is competence. We got to be good at what we do. That's what the nation expects. That's what the nation demands. And that's what we owe to each of us, to each other as fellow soldiers, is we got to be the best teammate that we can be. Again, we've got to be trained. We've got to be ready. We got to go all in on soldiering, meaning we got to hit the books. We got to show up to train. We got to be present. And we just got to be experts in our craft, no matter what MOS or role that we have and no matter what echelon. You know, I think if we do those things, if we provide those additives or ingredients into the fuel of trust, I mean, there's nothing that we can't do. And that's stuff that you got to build at the outset. And you've heard at SMA, you know, you've heard senior leaders talk about, hey, you can't surge trust at times of crisis. It already has to exist. So to me, that's how we get after it, right? Using the Army Guard is that great utility pickup truck, can do anything. It's tough as nails. It can go 500,000 miles. You're not going to break it down. The engine of that pickup truck is our soldiers. And then what powers or fuels that engine is trust without question. And then the additives of trust of character, commitment, and competence.
No, you well said, sir. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say it any better than you just said right there. But you're really right. The trust, if they trust you, they'll follow you anywhere. The other thing I want to say real quickly is that it's harder for the National Guard than anybody else because they, you know, they're not, it's not a full-time job, you know, a weekend a month, I guess, and 2 weeks a year. And it's hard for them to stay, you know, proficient in that stuff. And so they got to be committed. They got to understand exactly what their jobs are. And if they're not doing that, and I think they are doing that. I've seen the Guard change a lot over the years and get better and better and better and better. So I'm up for them, and I know they're doing a great job because of leadership like yourself. Hey, Sergeant Major, how do we build teams where every soldier feels valued, respected, and really trained to standard?
Well, I'm going to echo what General Stubbs just
said. I would, too, if I was sitting next to him. I heard all that stuff. I made sure I echoed it.
Absolutely. But it starts with engaged leaders that, just as General Stubbs said, have impeccable character. They are committed to the Army values, not just compliant with regulation. They also are competent. You know, you have to be technically and tactically proficient. And your soldiers know that you know how to do your job and you know how to do their job, and you can teach, coach, and mentor them. And I'll add one more. Our soldiers have to know that you care as a leader. So it starts with character, competence, commitment, and caring for your soldiers. And one of the best ways that we can care for our soldiers is by enforcing standards and discipline. And by communicating with them, you know, often counseling them, making sure that they know where they're getting it right and where there's room for improvement.
Well said. I'm sitting there thinking, how can I join back up again, being a National Guard? I'm ready to go right now. So
let's go, SMA.
I'll tell you the other thing, though. I'll just add one thing here. They've got to see you, too. You got to be around. You got to be visible. They got to see exactly what you're doing. And that falls in everything you said already, the trust, the care, and the commitment to all the things that you're doing. And you've got to be right on target to do that. Especially, it's harder for the Guard, I think, and the leadership in the Guard, because you're, you know, the people that's normally in that organization are scattered out all over. And so the fact that they got to see you and see what's going on. Hey, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about something that's probably really important in your life, and that's leadership philosophy. So please stay right there. We'll be right back. This is your next mission video podcast with me, your host, Jack L. Dilley, 12th Sergeant of the Army. And if you're enjoying this discussion, and I know that you are because we're talking about leadership, we're talking about our guard, we're talking about commitment, caring, trust, please like us, click on that subscribe button below, and be sure to click on the bell to receive notifications of all of our upcoming video podcast releases. I'll be right back after a word from our presenting sponsors.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, proudly presented by Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Their members are the mission. Purdue Global. You're ready for a comeback, and with Purdue Global, you can do more than take classes. You can take charge of your story, of your career, of your life. Earn a degree you can be proud of and get an education employers respect. Start your comeback at PurdueGlobal.edu. And USAA.
A promise is a trust not to be broken. Whether spoken with an oath or sealed with a pinky. And after 100 years, we're still taking care of the military community and their families. That's our mission, always.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Dilley.
Welcome back. We're talking with Lieutenant General John Stubbs, Director, and Sergeant Major Brian Kendrick, Command Sergeant Major of the Army National Guard. Before we get back to our discussion, I want to let you know about a way to support our work we're doing on behalf of our veterans and families here at the American Freedom Foundation. If you have a used vehicle you're planning to get rid of or some property you don't have any plans for, you can donate it. Visit our website at AmericanFreedomFoundation.org/donate and click on the vehicle donation button or the home donation button to support our work. We appreciate your support. Sir, you emphasize leading on offense and leaning into friction. How do junior leaders adopt that mindset without overstepping the role?
No, hey, SMA, I appreciate that. Yeah, so leading on offense, right? So leading on offense, to me, it just means being proactive, being an engaged leader. Initiative, you talk about initiative and this concept of mission command, you know, we've got to own that. We've got to embrace that. And for junior leaders at Echelon, to me, leading on offense just means, hey, understanding your leader's or your commander's intent, then taking their respective intent, applying it to your own organization at Echelon, whatever it is, understanding what your right and left limits are, but really just understanding and appreciating what the overall goal, mission, or objective is, and then just move out. Use your initiative, use your experience, and then leverage those within your team to accomplish the mission. Not waiting necessarily for steerage. I mean, you get the objective, you get the mission, the intent from your higher level leader, and then you just move out with your own initiative. Check in to make sure that you're on azimuth, but lead. Don't wait. Move out. Lean into leadership. That's kind of what I mean in terms of leading on offense as it relates to moving to friction, right? So as we lead, as we move along our path towards the objective or towards mission accomplishment, there's no doubt bad things are going to happen. I mean, we're teams of teams and we're made up of human beings. We're all naturally flawed. None of us is perfect. And the teams that we work with, again, it's a human endeavor. We're going to disappoint one another. We're going to let each other down. We're going to fail to accomplish the task. Those, we just can't ignore those things, right? So as things like that happen, you've got to move to that friction. You've got to address that friction. You got to knock it down. You got to repair it, and you got to make your organization better so you can continue to march. So that's kind of what I mean just in terms of leading on offense and moving towards friction. It's just really proactive, intent-driven leadership that, again, is centered around the leader's own individual initiative within the commander's intent. Mission command, very simple.
Yeah, all the time he was talking, I'm thinking about coaching, teaching, and mentoring, you know, yes. Developing. And they're looking at you for that advice. They're looking at you to, and the other thing I really love what you just said, they're going to make mistakes. And when they make mistakes, you don't kill them. What you say is, well, that's not right. Let me just coach you a little bit and give you, you know, give you the parameters right there, left side and the right side there a little bit. But you got to do that. I made so many mistakes in my military career. I probably shouldn't got past Spec 4, to tell you the truth. But I made a lot of mistakes. But I always had good leaders that were coaching and teaching me and showing what right looked like. And I think that's, you know, I used to look at people all the time and I'd say, I want to be like him or her. I want to be a leader like they are. And I think that's what we need to do. And I said it a minute ago, I think leadership is a lot of it's about just being there and being that's able right. to communicate and to talk and, you know, and listen to what they have to say. So I think it's important. Hey Sergeant, right. what advice would you give to a new squad leader trying to build their leadership style from, you know, from the ground up? I can think about my ground up leadership style, but what advice would you give a squad leader?
Well, SMA, I think anytime you're going to build something from the ground up, you need a good set of blueprints, right? You need a blueprint. You need a plan. Well, thankfully, the Army's provided that to us as non-commissioned officers. I would tell them to go grab a copy of the creed of the non-commissioned officer, the one that they signed when they were promoted to sergeant, and read that. And you can't ask for a better blueprint or a better foundation for your leadership style than everything that the creed of the non-commissioned officer requires of us. No one's more professional than I. You know, competence has to be our watchword. Officers of our unit will have maximum time to accomplish their duties. They won't have to accomplish ours. You know, we have two basic responsibilities, right? We're going to accomplish the mission and we're going to take care of our soldiers. So I think that if I were counseling a young staff sergeant that was taking over a squad, start with the creed of the non-commissioned officer. And you everything that's in there can be put in one of those buckets we talked about earlier, commitment, character, caring, or competence, you know, and so that's where I would start. And I would honestly reflect, you know, on how do I measure up to each of those requirements. And if there's a deficiency somewhere, well, we're supposed to know ourselves and seek self-improvement. So I'm going to make sure I get better. And I'm going to keep working on self-improvement until I reflect everything that creed has told me that I need to be.
Yeah, you just convinced me that I need to stay out of the Army. You guys are too smart for me. That's for sure. Wait a minute. Hey, look here, there's one thing I'd add there, Sergeant Major, and you hit on it already, is the counseling aspect. Make sure that you take the time to counsel your soldiers. I used to tell everybody, no matter what level I was at, I want to be counseled. Tell me when I'm doing good and what do you think I need to improve on. And you got to have that honest dialogue, that honest conversation. If you miss that, then that's when they sort of stray a little bit. So keep talking, keep listening. I always tell people, if you want to be a good leader, be a good communicator, and really be a good listener. Listen to what people have to say. And I think that's really probably the key to most of the people I've ever been around that I thought were pretty good leaders. Hey, sir, in your experience, every once in a while I get something right, very seldom here. But hey, sir, in your experience, what's the key to fostering real productive communication between leaders and those that we're leading?
You know, I think the key really is it just starts with authenticity. You know, just being authentic, being real, humble, approachable, and credible. And that's not original to me. I mean, those words are kind of used. You know, I kind of stole those. If you go out and you look at the Top Gun programs or the weapons school programs of tactical aviation within the Navy and the Air Force, those very well accomplished aviator, fighter pilot type instructors, I mean, they talk about being humble, approachable, and credible. And I think the same applies to us as Army leaders at Echelon. And then just also being authentic, being real. Being willing to go knee to knee, eye to eye with a subordinate. And then also there's a certain aspect of, I think, vulnerability that you've got to be willing to accept in terms of telling your own story and just humbling yourself with respect to the way you communicate. Part of my leadership philosophy as well is, you know, we as leaders, I think we've got to be willing to really sit and listen. Listen first, right? Stephen Covey, you know, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, back in the back in the 1990s. He talks about seek first to understand, then to be understood. And I think as leaders, we've got to be willing to listen, to understand what's happening within our soldiers' lives, what's happening within the lives and the circumstances of our leaders at echelon, what's going on in our units. And we do that, again, just being authentic, and then just being humble, approachable, credible, and then just a certain amount of vulnerability in terms of talking about your own experiences, maybe your own past failures, maybe your own insecurities as we've gone about our own leadership journeys within the Army.
Yeah. You know, I had a good friend of mine just recently passed away, but he called me on the phone when I got to be the Sergeant Major in the Army. He gave me some great advice. He said, first of all, don't let your head swell. He said, don't change who you are, because every once in a while we get promoted. We say, hey, look at me. Look at me.
That's right.
No, don't let your head swell. The second thing is, he said, when you make a decision, you're not making a decision based on what's right for Jack Tilley. You're making a decision what's right for the United States Army and what's right for your soldiers. Not, maybe not be right for you, but it's right for the people that you're working with. Never forget that. He told me a bunch of other stuff. I won't tell you now, but he was a great leader and really had a good understanding of how to treat people. I think you're really right. Being a good listener and listen to people and hearing what they have to say, what they have to share. If they know, again, goes back to trust, what we've already been talking about.
That's right.
If they know you care, you trust them, and you're listening to them, you may not take their idea, but guess what? You may take their idea. So, yeah, that's certainly important. Hey, Sergeant Major, how do relationships directly affect the mission success in combat? Really, in combat, not just in combat, in garrison also.
Oh, everything we do as non-commissioned officers centers around people and relationships. And you know, we talked about building trust within an organization. You don't build trust, you don't build relationships in the middle of a crisis. Right. You have to do that when the skies are blue and things are calm. So, I think that there's no way around the importance of building relationships. In fact, that's one of our four focus areas here in the Army National Guard, is strengthening our enterprise partnerships. The partnership, the relationship that we have here at National Guard Bureau with our states, our territories. We have an incredible program called the State Partnership Program, where, you know, we work with partners around the globe to build enduring long-term relationships. I think one of the most exciting things about that, and really highlights how important relationships are to accomplishing the mission. When Ukraine found itself early in the fight with Russia, one of their first phone calls was to the California National Guard, because they had a several decade-long relationship with the soldiers of the California National Guard. I can't think of a better example for highlighting how important relationships are, how critical.
Well, I remember going to Saudi every once in a while, and we rotate the active duty and the guard too. They rotate year after year after year, rotating in there. And it takes you years to build that confidence, for them to have confidence in your abilities and trust you and be committed. It's relationship is so important for all of us. That's for doggone sure. That's why even now, I've been out of the Army 20 years. I still have relationships with people in the military that I served with, and even some of the new ones, I still talk to them too. Hey, this is a great discussion. I probably could go on for hours and talk to you. We need to take another quick break. When we come back, I want to discuss the training at squad level and building that lethality. We'll be right back at just after a couple minutes here. Now, here's a word for one more of the organizations that helped make this show possible.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, brought to you in part by Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision.
Part of transitioning out is that dental and vision insurance breaks off from your medical insurance.
Vision and dental is very important to be able to enjoy your retirement.
Blue Cross Blue Shield makes a transition so much easier.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're blessed to be here today with Lieutenant General John Stubbs, Director, and Sergeant Major Brian Kendrick, Command Sergeant Major of the Army National Guard. Remember, this is your show. We know there's so many issues that directly affect you, and we want to address each and every one of them. So please, as I've said many times, reach out to me. Tell me what topics you'd like to cover. You can leave me a message at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. And guess what? I'll reach back out to you. Hey, Sergeant Major, you emphasize the importance of getting back to the basics, and I absolutely love that. That's for doggone sure. What does the foundation of training look like at a squad level, and how do you ensure it stays effective? You can answer both those questions, I guess, together there.
Yeah, sure. And so I think that it starts with, as we mentioned, being brilliant at the basics, focusing on field craft. We used to call it common task training or Army warrior task, battle drills, those fundamental tasks that we know soldiers are going to get called upon to do, you know, if you're in close contact with the enemy. And sometimes in the Guard, it can look a little bit different, perhaps in the active component. You know, for us, if you're a squad leader and you're worried about the fundamentals and making sure that every soldier in your squad is ready to deploy, you're gonna make sure that they're operationally available. So you're tracking their medical readiness. You know, have they been through their periodic health assessment? You're going to make sure that they're qualified in their MOS, that they're passing the Army Combat Fitness Test, soon to be on the 1st of June, the Army Fitness Test. And you're making sure that they're getting to the rifle range and they're qualified with their primary weapon, just as basic building blocks. And sir, feel free to jump in, because yeah, I know sure. you're an infantryman at heart. And, I think that one of the things that we're trying to do here in the Army National Guard to give squad leaders, sets and reps in a tough, realistic training environment is kicking off our Minuteman rotation program. Sir, any thoughts on the Minuteman rotation?
Yeah. Hey, so SMA, let me, the cool thing about the Army National Guard, right, is we're just about 40% of the Army's combat power. 40%. We are the combat reserve of the Army. So we have 8 divisions. We have 27 brigade combat teams currently made up of 5 armor brigades, 2 striker brigades, and 20 infantry brigades. We represent about 56% of the Army's artillery capacity, and then just a myriad of functional and multifunctional capabilities such as combat aviation, combat engineer, you name it. So, we are absolutely warfighting centered as an Army National Guard. And in order to be warfighting centered, you got to be focused on lethality. And for us, and you said it at the outset, we got 39 days a year, typically 39 days a year to build unit readiness, lethality at echelon. It is an incredibly challenging proposition, right? But for us in the Army Guard, kind of the foundation level for us is the squad. The squad, and really to a certain extent, the platoon. So what we want to do is we want to maximize or optimize those 39 days, typically, like you said, 1 weekend a month, and then 15 days during an annual training period to get after those key and critical battle task and then mission essential task at higher echelons that when the nation calls, we can rapidly aggregate into a pretty formidable capability. So for us, again, foundational elements of squad. Now, in a time-constrained and resource-constrained environment, for us, we've got to pick something and we got to be good at it. Yeah, it starts at the individual soldier level, the small team level, being brilliant in the basics, that field craft, that individual level proficiency, and then we aggregate that into the team and the squad and the platoon level. We pick maybe a handful of battle tasks and maybe even just 1 to 2 mission essential tasks, and we go all in. I can tell you when I was a lieutenant back in the 1990s, resource constrained environment. We didn't have a lot of time, not a lot of extra training days, and we went all in on squad and platoon attack. That's what my brigade did. Yeah. we were going to be the best squad and platoon attack brigade in the entire United States Army. And every IDT weekend, we went to the field and we conducted deliberate attack over and over again. We went to annual training. We rolled out an annual training, and in a multi-echelon type training environment, it was all about the attack. And through that mindset, post 9/11, we were the same Army National Guard that showed up and showed out, in the global war on terrorism, you know, and we fought side by side across all components of the Army for over 20 years because of the foundation that we laid prior to 9/11, that foundation of just brilliance of the basics, going all in, optimizing time, optimizing resources. And that's kind of where we find ourselves now as we come out of GWAT, reorienting to large-scale combat operations. And again, what can we do to make sure that if and when the balloon goes up and we've got to deploy to fight and win our nation's wars, we can go to a mobilization station, aggregate that foundational readiness at company and battalion and brigade levels, and go overseas, fight, win, survive, and come home.
You know, you both said a lot of really good things. I was sitting there thinking all the time, you're going, you don't have enough time when the balloon goes up. That's it. You got to go. You got to deploy. And if you don't know the basic fundamentals about just shooting your weapon first out, just the basic stuff. I mean, you can get on all the other stuff. You got to know your craft, and you got to be good at what you're doing. Because let's be honest, when we went in the military, went in the National Guard, you raise your hands, I'll protect and defend. That says two things. One is I'm willing to take a life, and I'm willing to give up my life. So you have to be ready. You know, I always say, let it be somebody else, not me. Let somebody else get shot. I don't want to get shot. I'm a coward. Hey, sir, you already talked about this, building lethal squads. What defines lethality in the modern National Guard formation, and how do you measure that? How do you evaluate that?
Yeah, I think, you know, Sergeant Major hit it first, and I think I kind of followed up with some of that, right, is identifying that foundational element in which we want to really invest in. And that's got to be balanced against time. It's got to be balanced against just other resourcing considerations. But for us in the National Guard, it's really at the squad and then at the platoon level. I think in 39 days, we can build cohesive lethal squads, and we can also build cohesive and proficient platoons. And that's what we're focused. That's what we're focused on doing in the National Guard. So as it relates to our warfighting mission, we're all in on that. And then, you know, the way I look at it, and the way the Sergeant Major and I look at it, you know, if we're proficient with respect to our warfighting skills, we're ready for combat. We're ready for anything. So if we got to do something in the homeland in response to, say, a natural disaster or a terrorist attack or whatever the case may be, because of our combat competencies and the foundational skills and proficiency that we built at the squad and platoon level, we can roll out in short order and be there for our citizens in time of need. And you see that playing out time and time again all across the country. You really see it during like hurricane season, the wildfire season, and the like, guardsmen just continually responding in very short order to the needs of their governors so they can go out there, protect citizens, infrastructure, everything else, because, you know, when it comes down to it, we're competent in our warfighting skills. Those warfighting skills really translate well to what we do inside the homeland as it relates to just leadership, troop leading procedures, pre-combat checks and inspections, the basic fundamentals of issuing an order, managing risk, all those things, they absolutely correlate and correspond with one another.
Yeah, I was sitting there thinking about train the way you're going to fight. That probably means more to you guys than a lot of things. Train the way you're going to fight, and don't try to cut any corners. You know, make sure. I remember when I was a division sergeant major, when I got the division, they never fired with their body armor on. And I said, why aren't you doing that? He said, well, we don't shoot as good. Well, how about that? Put it on, you know? So I made them put it on, and of course the scores went down, and, you know, 4 or 5 months later, they fired just as good. So I'm really into, I'm sure you are too, train the way you're gonna fight. You just can't cut corners. No time can you cut corners, that's for sure. Sergeant Major, you said every squad leader is a trainer. I love that, that's exactly true. What's your challenge to those E5s and E6s on how to, you know, how to do fall into that role, I guess?
Well, it's tough. You know, training management, I think we recognize across our enterprise, you know, we've lost a little bit of our skill set when it comes to managing training or training management. You know, because so much of the global war on terror was what I call kind of wash, rinse, repeat from a training standpoint, right? It was very prescribed. So I think we recognize that, you know, that's an area or a skill set that we have to build back up. And I think we're doing that in the operational domain by giving our squad leaders time back on the schedule so that they can conduct sergeants training and focus on tasks where they see, you know, things that need improvement within the squad. And then in the institutional domain, you know, we're taking a look at all NCO PME from the basic leader course all the way up to the sergeant's major course, and making sure that we're putting blocks of instruction on training management back into that institutional training, because we recognize that's a skill set that's got to be improved.
Yeah. You know, very quickly, that Sergeant E5 can be a platoon sergeant. Our staff sergeant can be a platoon sergeant. Or a second lieutenant can be a company commander or a battalion commander. You know, when war starts and people start, they don't say, well, don't shoot them because he's in charge. No, that's not how it works. You know, so you got to make sure they're all trained and they know exactly what to do. That's why it's so important to keep everybody informed and communicate about what's going on, what you're doing. Hey, if somebody wants to reach out to you, either one of you can answer. Somebody wants to reach out to you to join the National Guard. What's the best way to do that? In fact, I'm going to write that number down so I can contact you right after the show.
Well, you know, I think the easiest way in this digital age, information at your fingertips with respect to our young folks out there, Google us. Go out on all the social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, X, you name it. Just type in Army National Guard. Those are the keywords. It'll immediately come up, and it's going to put you in touch with a recruiter within each and every state in our territories in the District of Columbia. Again, all you got to do is just Google your state's Army National Guard. It will give you a number, a website, or a QR code. Go immediately there. It's going to instantly put you in touch with somebody that can tell you all about the incredible benefits of being a soldier in the Army National Guard. And the way I characterize it, SMA, you know, we've got our ad campaign out there, Uncommon is Calling. Being a member of our Army National Guard, it's uncommon. It's special. It's unique to be a citizen soldier, to wear the uniform of a soldier in the United States Army as a member of the Army National Guard, but then also having the opportunity to continue higher education or grow in a career, in a civilian career, and then grow a family, all that done simultaneously. It is uncommon. It's unique and special. And I'll also tell you, there is no better place for a young person in today's America than to serve in the Army National Guard, to be a citizen soldier. No better place, because there's no better people, no better opportunity, and no better deal, in my humble military opinion. Mm-hmm. So just get out there and Google it. Come find us. Come see us. And we want to bring you onto the team. We've got like record-setting recruiting metrics and recruiting results that are happening this year. We're very proud of our recruiting enterprise. Folks want to join our organization. And more importantly and special to me is that once we get them on board, our retention rates are just through the roof right now. So once we get them on board, they're a member of a team, valued, respected, they're trained, and they want to stay on our team. So our major.
Well, hey, wait a minute. So I'm gonna add that. I got some grandbabies. You think I can sign them up early and let them just sort of
pin them up? Yep. We'll go ahead and we'll take their information and we'll load them in. We'll load them into the program. We'll get them ready, SMA.
Hey, Sergeant Major, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm incredibly proud of our Army National Guard soldiers. One of the greatest parts of this job is having the opportunity to travel and visit with our soldiers, whether they're deployed overseas or they're training in their home state or territory. And it never ceases to amaze me just how committed and dedicated our Army National Guard soldiers are, balancing their civilian life with all the rigors and the demands of military service. I'm incredibly proud to serve them as their command sergeant major.
Well, thanks. Well, I appreciate all you guys are doing. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Anything else you want to say, sir? Any final thoughts or anything you want to say? I think you probably covered everything.
Oh, SMA, I think just what CSM Kendrick just described and articulated, you couldn't say it better. We're proud of our troopers out there. We've just got great troopers that are doing mighty things for their state and for their nation. Their commitment, their sacrifice, their dedication to the nation, to their state, and to their teams. It's just something that's awe-inspiring, and we draw energy from it every day. So, SMA, I hope you and all those that are out there listening to this podcast, they're proud of their Army National Guard.
Absolutely.
Proud of their Army National Guard.
There you go. Sergeant Major, you got anything?
Hey. SMA, thank you for the opportunity to come on your podcast and share our Army National Guard story. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for continuing to serve, SMA. Thank you for continuing to serve. Tell the story.
Hey, I'll never stop. That's for doggone sure. Thanks again for being with us. I appreciate it. God bless you. Hoo-ah! Go National Guard.
Ready for combat, Sergeant Major.
This
I am, every day. Hey, thanks again to Lieutenant General John Stubbs and Sergeant Major Brian Kendricks of the Army National Guard for being with us. I'm Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, and you've been enjoying Your Next Mission video podcast. Thank you for joining us. Log on to our website at yournextmission.org and leave me a review. I always say, I hope it's a good one, but I'll take whatever you give me. While you're there, you can visit our nonprofit and corporate partners who have jobs and services available that can assist you in your transition from the military. And check out our job board in partnership with the Recruit Military and Opline, where you can create your own personal profile that will match you with just the right job real time. You can follow me on my social media pages, X, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, and Rumble. And if you like what we're doing with Your Next Mission, please click on that subscribe button below. And don't forget to click on the bell to receive notifications about our upcoming video podcast releases. Remember, we want to hear from you. Please leave me a message at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. Thanks again to Lieutenant General Stubbs and CSM Kendrick for joining us today. And at the end of the show, right here, I always have final thoughts. Look here, if you're not pumped up about the National Guard, if you don't understand the importance of what they're doing each and every day for us, they're citizen soldiers that care so much about us, about our country, about our lives each and every day that help us on all these national disasters around the country. If you don't know anything about them, reach out to them, talk to them, see what they're doing. And guess what? I bet you'd be a better person to be part of their team. God bless you for all that you're doing. Thanks for watching, and thanks to New Mind Studios and, of course, our sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue Global, USAA, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision. We appreciate all you do for our military. And as always, see you on the high ground. Hooah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.